All right, back here on Talking Baseball, Giants pregame show. Giants trying to salvage the series against the Minnesota Twins with a day game today. Adam Copeland joins us now alongside Bill Lasky and Marty Lurie. I'm Kerry Crowley. Adam, how are you this morning?
What's up, dude? I'm doing pretty well. Salvage a game against the Twins, man. That's where we are. That's the most exciting thing to try to get through on a Sunday. But, yeah, we'll see if they can salvage one against forever giant Aaron Sanchez. How about that?
Yeah, one of the all-time Giants, Aaron Sanchez. I think he was DFA'd with an ERA sub 3.5 last year, which tells you that even though his statistics looked good, the Giants saw something there. And since the Giants released him, things have not been going in the right direction for Aaron Sanchez. I wonder, about 6 weeks to go left in the season, I think at this point it's relatively safe to say, Adam, the Giants are not taking a wild card spot. They're three games under 500. The wild card teams are pretty clear as of this point. The race does not necessarily involve them. What would you like to see over the final 6 weeks of the season or so?
It's an interesting question because, you know, we've been talking for almost 6 months now about how they need to improve defensively, how they're not fundamentally sound, how, you know, the starting pitching has been pretty darn good. The bullpen has not been very good. And we have not seen much change, which is sort of what makes you about a 500 team. And if you're about a 500 team, you're anywhere from 77 wins to, I don't know, 82 or 83 wins. And the Giants right now feel more like they're a 77-win team, a sub-500 team. So end of the season, I'm not sure what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some guys who are expected to be here next year, maybe stay consistent, stay hot, like a guy like J.D. Davis. I'd like to see him in the lineup consistently for the end of the season. Lamont Wade Jr. has been awful in the last few weeks. It'd be nice to get him back on track with the hope that he can still claim a roster spot, maybe the starting outfield job for next year. Maybe Mike Yastrzemski streaks a little bit. But again, you look at some of the guys on this team and you go, these are, and Tom Tolbert has said this on our show for a couple of weeks, when you're you have a bunch of rotational players like this or platoon players, they're kind of like sprinkles. You can have a couple of those in your roster, but you don't want a whole bowl of sprinkles. You want a bowl of ice cream with the sprinkles on top. And we talked to Farhan earlier this week on our show, and I asked him straight up. I said, what do you think you guys need? What do you think you need to improve the team? And he said, probably 4 to 5 everyday players. And I went, well, that tells you that they got some work to do this offseason. So it's tough to sort of salvage something at the end of a season where rosters don't expand to 40 men like you used to get. You get 28 players now. There's not a bunch of young guys that can come up and get some work and some experience for next year. I think you want to get out of the season healthy and maybe get some guys who you're planning to have here next year have consistent ends to the season. Again, guys like J.D. Davis, maybe get Lamont Wade on the right page.
Yeah, one of the guys who could factor into the 2023 equation is taking the mound today, and that's Jacob Junis. After his tenure with the Kansas City Royals ended, I mean, he was an under-the-radar free agent. No one really thought a whole lot of what he had done in Kansas City. He comes to San Francisco, the slider takes off, he looks like a completely different pitcher. And no, he's probably not a front-end-of-the-rotation guy, probably not even a middle-of-the-rotation guy, but could you see Junis factoring in next season at the back end and potentially being a part of a spring training competition, or would you like to see the Giants make upgrades in the rotation to the point where Junis is more of a long man or more of an odd man out?
I'm okay with Junis as a starter. I mean, he's been really good. Before he went on the injured list before the All-Star break, he had been one of the Giants' best starters. He'd be sort of a godsend for a while, especially in the month of May when Carlos Rodon and Logan Webb were not pitching as well. And Webb has struggled a little bit lately. Rodon has been fantastic. Alex Cobb, I think, has been really, really good in general over the last couple of months since he came off the injured list also. So guys who you'd think would say, you know, you'd look at the rotation and go, yeah, we need some upgrades there. I mean, Kevin Gausman, when he came over, he was a scrap heap kind of guy and now is a frontline starter again in baseball. Carlos Rodon, who was somewhat inconsistent due to injuries in the early part of his career, obviously established himself last year and has ended up being pretty darn good. I think in general, the Giants have done a really good job at evaluating sort of pitchers where they can hone in on a skill set or a pitch or something that they're good at. And right now with Jacob Junis, it's that he's a strike thrower. I think he's been fantastic. I would like to see him back next year, give him an opportunity to battle for a rotational piece. And if it does not work out and he's maybe not a rotation guy and then you can bolster the rotation elsewhere, then yeah, let him go back to being a long guy. Remember the first two outings he had this season were games where Sam Long was the opener and then he went 5 shutout innings. So he's capable of coming out of the bullpen and eating some innings for you in the middle of a ball game if he's not the starter. I'd like to see Junis back. I think he's been really good, and especially with concerns and uncertainty around Anthony Discofani, I think you've got to keep as many of these guys as you can.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Harkening back to the early days of the season when Junis would come out of the bullpen and go four or five innings. That's when he really made a name for himself in San Francisco. So great perspective. Adam Copeland, of course, the host of Tolbert and Copes, good friend of the show here on Talkin' Baseball for several years now, joining us here on the Giants pregame show. Copes, one other one that I wanted to get to before we kind of throw things around the rest of the league and look at Major League Baseball, and that's the Evan Longoria question, because a lot of people, now that Longoria is on a hot streak, making the case that, you know, you bring him back in 2023, be the final year of his contract, $13 million option. It's $5 million if you don't want him on the roster. That's what you've got to pay him. And Marty made the case earlier on the show that the Giants had already brought back Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford, and they've seen how that have gone this season. You'd rather give up on a guy a year early than a year too late. Where do you come down on Evan Longoria?
Well, it's interesting. You know, if Susan Slusser didn't have the article about a month ago about Evan Longoria's future, I would say probably the same that a lot of people are saying. I'm okay with his production. I think he's been hitting really well lately. He's been a nice middle-of-the-order player, and he's sort of the same guy production-wise that has come over to San Francisco, or that came over 5 years ago. He's not the young Evan Longoria, not an MVP candidate, not that kind of guy, but he's playing a solid third base. He's hitting for power. He hits lefties exceptionally well. Would be nice to have him back, I think, for sure. But as I mentioned, Susan Slusser wrote that piece about a month or so ago where he said his future was uncertain, and a lot of that is that his family, and I didn't know this for, I guess, the last 5 years, his wife and his kids are living on the other side of the country. He didn't move them out here with him, and he's getting to a stage in his life where I think he's going, you know, if I decide to come back, is it worth it to play one more season and be away for another 7 months from my family in San Francisco, or should I opt out, or would the Giants decline this option and I can go on back to the East Coast and maybe go retire at Tampa Bay Ray, maybe go DH for somebody else on the East Coast, so at least he's closer to family. I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to be involved in this that's maybe not necessarily baseball related for Evan Longoria. So while I'd like to have him back, I would totally understand if the thought for him was, hey, it's time to call it a career, or maybe it's time to try to get back closer to home to be near his newborn baby. I think a lot of times we forget the human element of what goes into baseball. This guy thought he was going to finish his career in Tampa Bay. He signed a long-term contract and then gets traded across the country to San Francisco and did not move his family. And I don't blame him for not uprooting his family. We heard the story about Darren Ruff. His kid was about to start school 10 days away, and then he gets traded to the New York Mets, and it's just part of the game. Nobody's going to feel bad for you, really, but I think you got to start thinking about those factors when it's an older player like that. Even when he's productive at the end of a contract, he may not want to be back in San Francisco next year, and that can be more about personal reasons than about the team or the production itself.
Yeah, very well said. The human element is so often forgotten, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because it's really critical that we remember that, especially for the aging guys, the veterans who've got kids and want to see them grow up. The story about Darren Ruff and his kids starting school, I mean, Darren Ruff had sacrificed a lot to go over to Korea and try to extend his baseball career. He gets the opportunity to come home. I thought that was really one of the heartwarming stories of the Giants in the last few seasons. So really good perspective from Adam Copeland. Now let's shift gears, talk about baseball, talk about the major leagues and what's happening. And Copes, yesterday the New York Mets kind of a surprise announcement that they're retiring number 24 for Willie Mays. And sure, Mays played almost all of his career in San Francisco and made just about every mark on the game in San Francisco, but it was one of the last wishes of their old owners. So Willie Mays, jersey retirement in New York with the Mets. Your thoughts?
I mean, dude, you're not going to get me to knock anybody saying, yeah, you shouldn't work 24. You could retire 24 like league wide. And I'd
exactly.
But I did sort of laugh when I saw it. I was like, okay, where do we draw the line? Like, how great of a player does it have to be, and who's allowed to retire said number? Like, should the Giants hang up 51 for Randy Johnson? Like, should Steve Carlton have his number retired as a San Francisco Giant? Like, I look at all these, like, the random sort of Hall of Famers that finish their career. Oral Hershiser put on a Giants uniform. You know what I mean? So, and again, none of these guys reached the status of Willie Mays, and I think it's a great honor. I think it's really cool. Willie's a New York guy. I mean, he always wears the G hat, which I think a lot of people think is sort of a nod to just being a Giant and not specifically a San Francisco Giant. I think it's cool that the Mets are doing it. It doesn't bother me at all, but where do we draw the line? I thought it was sort of funny, and we'll see if there are other cases of this across baseball where a player who maybe played a season or two seasons with an organization has his number retired.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. How about Willie Mays, number 24, retired league-wide? I think that we could do that. I think that that would be a great celebration of his career. He's the oldest living Hall of Famer, and you're never going to catch me, you know, knocking anyone for praising Willie Mays. So good on the New York Mets for that decision. Another interesting story around baseball right now, and maybe with the St. Louis Cardinals, we could talk about Albert Pujols and his chase for 700, but I actually wanted to ask you about Paul Goldschmidt and the chase for the Triple Crown. It would be the first National League Triple Crown winner since 1937.
Joe Medwick.
There, yeah. Your guy. guy, Joe Medwick. They used to call him Meddy back in the day, according to Marty. No, but in reality, does the Triple Crown register with you? Is that a cool accomplishment in the era of analytics? Is that something that you think that all these front offices still value?
I don't really care if they value it. I think it's sweet. If nobody's done it in the National League since 1927, what does that tell you? I mean, it means to carry some weight. You know, we can look at analytics and we can look at ways to approach the game and give yourself an edge and maybe shave some corners and find value in the margins. That's all fine and good. But there's stuff that the reason baseball is so special is there are certain benchmarks, certain numbers. Even if Aaron Judge were to hit 60 home runs this year, it would not be the home run record. He wouldn't come close to what Barry Bonds hit at 73. Home runs in 2001, but that number of 60 would still be really cool because nobody ever does it. If a guy hits, goes for a Triple Crown, the same as I remember, that was sort of the analytics shift in my mind when who was it? It was Mike Trout was up against Miguel Cabrera for the MVP. Mike Trout had, like, statistically been the analytical obvious MVP. However, nobody had won a Triple Crown in the American League since I think it was Carl Yastrzemski did it in 67 or something like that before Miguel Cabrera came back and did it. And so the old-minded baseball writers, I think, were saying, well, Miguel Cabrera should be the MVP, and the young minds were saying Mike Trout should be. I don't think there's a wrong answer there, but it should tell you that the fact that nobody ever does it and that nobody's done it since Ducky Joe Medwick of the Gas House Gang Cardinals in the 1920s and 30s or whatever. If nobody's done it since then, it should still carry some value, and especially with what Paul Goldschmidt is doing batting average-wise. You know, if he was winning the Triple Crown with a batting average of 270 or something like that, I'd say, yeah, it probably doesn't carry as much weight, but this guy's mashing. It would be really cool to see him get it.
Hey, Coach, one last one for you before we let you go here. Oakland A's today over at the Coliseum against the Yankees celebrating the 20th reunion of the team in 2002 that won 20 consecutive games. Got any memories of that team?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I remember watching that game and listening to that game. They were down like 11-0 to the Royals or something, and they ended up coming all the way back. Scott Hatterberg gets the walk-off home run. My favorite part about the movie Moneyball, and Murph and I always joke about this, really good movie, really good book. It's a great piece of fiction is what we always say, because they don't even mention that you've got the Cy Young Award winner in Barry Zito. You've got the MVP in Miguel Tejada. You've got the big three with Mulder, Hudson, and Zito. Hatterberg at first. I don't know if Frank Medicino was still on that team. I think Keith Folk was kicking around there too. I mean, that was a really, really fun team. That was an exciting era for the Oakland A's, and it's just so, so, so sad that they've driven that franchise into the ground and ran the fans out of there. Shout out to those fans that were sitting up in the upper deck earlier this week, and I know that's fun.
There he is, Adam Copeland.
Shout him out,
yeah, we will be sure to shout him out. Thank you so much for joining us here on Talking Baseball, sir.
All right, dude. Talk to you later.
All right, he is Adam Copeland. I am Kerry Crowley. Up next, we're going to go in the booth at Target Field with Dave Fleming. You're listening to the Giants pregame show. Giants and the Twins coming up here on KNBR 104.5 680, the sports leader.